I think that mindfulness exercises probably would be really amazing to do for little kids because you can really get into training them to go within and to not avoid themselves.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
So, Becca, the Clarity Journal, which you recently published this year, something that really spoke to me as I was looking at it and reading about it was getting in touch with what you want out of life. And I think it's so possible that parents get lost on that track, right? Or spouses, we get drawn into, okay, well, what's our spouse doing? What's our children doing? What's needed of me next? Instead of really reflecting on what do I want next? So, how do you guide others back into that? What do I want out of life?
Well, I think the first part of that is recognizing when you aren't getting out of life what you want. And I think those needs can be so all-encompassing that we forget to actually evaluate it in the first place. And we don't even recognize that we are out of sync with what we want because everybody else's needs have taken priority. I think I've seen that especially during the pandemic, but even before the pandemic, it is really hard to stay focused with children. Like, children can take up as much time as you will allow them to take up. And a lot of times it's hair on fire, right? Like, I feel really lucky right now. My kids' daycare got COVID. And they weren't separating out any of the kids. They didn't have cohort system, I didn't realize. And so my child was absent the day that the COVID came in. And so now 70 parents have to figure out what to do with their kids for 2 weeks. And it's been hard. And I think that when you have stuff like that going on in your life, it's always, that's what's going to end up taking priority. And it doesn't even before COVID, like, your kid gets sick. Well, when my kid gets sick, he ends up having a cough for a week. And it's hard to send him back to school before the cough ends because they keep asking, are you sure he's not sick? And I think that it's just finances. There's just always something that's going on in our lives. And I think one of the things I tell parents, especially, is that when you find that you are being shorter with people than you want to be, when you are not really showing up as a parent the way you want to, a lot of times that's internal. That's because you are disconnected from yourself. And so it's funny because a lot of times when we want to be doing something really well, parenting. Everyone wants to be doing parenting really well. And so then you focus on that and you let go of the things that you really want to focus on individually for yourself. That brings up angst. That brings up feelings within yourself. And those feelings are actually trying to give you a warning sign, like, hey, this isn't actually what you want. And we really need to get back to really focusing on you and what you want. And so I love telling parents, like, okay, the biggest sign that you're not doing what you want is if you find yourself snapping at your kids for no apparent reason.
Or your spouse,
Or your spouse,
or your dentist, anybody, right?
Find,
That's
you know, if you're
coworker.
snapping at the person, like the grocery store checkout person,
Yes.
it's
No, that's a
just,
really clear marker. Simple but clear.
yeah. And I've
It
heard somebody
is.
say that, like, if the reaction doesn't fit the interaction, there's something off somewhere, right? Like, if the way you're responding to a situation is like, whoo, actually, that was not meant for that person. That's the worst feeling.
It is the worst feeling, but then what really is required is to go back and figure out what that feeling came from. And I think a lot of us, because we are so underwater sometimes, don't do that. We've kind of been trained out of really recognizing our own feelings. And at the same time that we keep trying to validate our children's, and like, I don't know about you, but I spend a lot of time trying not to tell my children it's okay when they're upset. because it's okay, like silences them. And it's like, well, it's not okay for them right now. It's going to be okay. We're going to work through it, but it's not necessarily okay for them right now. But we do that same thing to ourselves. It's almost like we have to self-parent ourselves to really recognize when things aren't going the way we want to, and to also have the belief that we can make that better and that we can model for our children taking back our power.
And so what are some ways that you guide to take back that power? So once you identify, all right.
Yeah, you're being too short. You're snapping up
the train. The train is off the track.
Yes. I think that it's really important to get other people asking you questions. That's why I wrote the Clarity Journal in the first place, because I think that when you're in the middle of it, sometimes you get stuck in your own way of thinking about it. And if you are stuck, if you're feeling stuck, then branching out from where you are and gaining new insight is really helpful. And so the Clarity Journal, actually, I wrote this book when I was at my own precipice and I was trying to figure out what to do. And I was talking about it with a friend, because that's what we do oftentimes, is we talk about it with a friend first. And I was talking about it with her for probably the 10th time. And she got a teeny bit exasperated with me. I was like, Becca, you're a coach. What would you tell yourself? I was like, all right, yeah, I do this all the time. And how I do it is I ask questions. I ask a lot of questions, not in a like, what about this? What about this? What about this sort of way? It's more in a, what did you love as a kid? What makes you happy outside of work? Let me really do a deep dive into your strengths and where you're using them and where you feel like they're not being used. My favorite question in the Clarity Journal is, who do you envy and what does that tell you about yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because envy is really a useful emotion, because it shows exactly what we want. Like when you ask someone, who do you admire? Well, I admire Gandhi. Or you always admire people kind of in this like ethical, spiritual echelon of like a goodness that we don't necessarily feel like we're going to be able to attain. But when we talk about envy, we are talking about very specific things. You don't envy every writer, if you wanted to be a writer. There are specific writers who have either a lifestyle or a voice that you love. You don't envy every parent. You envy like the three parents that you see doing things really great with their kids. You know, they're always going to museums, or they're always outside going hiking, whatever it is. And but that tells you, if you really stop to analyze it, it tells you what you want. Mm. And it helps you create a picture, because you don't envy also like the same person. You envy like five people, and there's like different aspects of all of them. And so it's like those deep questions, I feel like really help break you out of whatever rote pattern of thinking you're in and help you really expand your toolbox to be able to really develop a more authentic internal sense. I think the other thing that I talk to my clients about is really following their voice and recognizing what voice is talking when. Like a lot of times you'll hear like your inner naysayer, or like you'll think about the negative voices in your head. Like, oh gosh, that was my mom. But I really like focusing on the positive voices too. You have multiple positive voices going on in your head at any given time. You have kind of your peppy best friend cheerleader. You have, hopefully, you're like the nice angel mom. And then you have like, you're kind of your own inner mentor coach. And I think that getting in touch with those voices can really help guide you as well.
That's amazing. You have children of your own. How do you tell them, oh, you have all these different voices, and to identify them? And do you have any great tools that you've used in your own family to guide differentiating between the ones that tell you the truth and the ones that lie to you?
So with my younger son, the book hadn't come out when with my older son, but with my younger son, there's this great book out called The Color Monster. And there's a pop-up book and just a plain book. And I would highly suggest, if anyone's listening to this and getting the book, get the pop-up book. The pop-up book's great. It shows this monster all swirled up in color, and then each color represents a negative emotion. And then by the end of the book, they're separating out all of those colors that are swirling around into sadness, anger. And I think that that's really helped my son to visualize, like, okay, I have this part of me. I have this part of me. I have this part of me. And I think, though, also, it's so funny because when you said that, I was like, you know, I don't really spend a ton of time talking about it with my kids, because at a certain level, kids are often more in touch with it than we are. And like, they will accept the voices in their head. I've got a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old. So I never consciously did it with the 12-year-old. And now I want to go back and talk to him. But I see him doing it. And I think part of that is because I've been meditating with my 12-year-old since he was 4. And so I think that mindfulness exercises probably would be really amazing to do for this little kids, because if you can really get into training them to go within and to not avoid themselves, I think that's the biggest part, is that most of us adults did not grow up with meditation, and we do sometimes avoid parts of ourselves.
Yeah, that's good. For sure. What would be the best, because I was always taught something called clarity equals power. And so now you're doing a clarity journal. So obviously it's very empowering. Why did you call it the clarity journal? Like, why did you clue? I mean, I've gone to clarity intensives. It's been some of my best personal development. But why did you do that? Why did you choose that? Just out of curiosity.
Because I think that that's where we get the most stuck. Like, sometimes you'll hear a lot, I need to get unstuck, or this person is stuck, or I feel stuck. And I think that when we are stuck, it's usually a lack of clarity. When we are stuck, inherently, we don't have enough information to really feel like we're going to move forward powerfully. We're not going to move forward with real momentum, because we're too busy still trying to decide if this is truly the right thing. And so everything starts with clarity, in my feeling.
Yeah. And with the clarity, so let's dig this to using the clarity journal. Let's say, and I know this happens because we talk to a lot of parents. I love my family. I like my business, or I appreciate my business. It's going well. I don't feel like I'm starting to get like that yell at the clerk. How do I find clarity? What am I missing for myself? And how do you hit upon that?
So I think that it's really just going within. And that does not have to be writing it down. I usually get on podcasts, and I do a fair number of podcasts with like fitness gurus. And like almost every time they're like, oh, but I don't like to write. And I'm like, you know what? Read one of the prompts and go on a run. And then afterwards, dictate to yourself what any realizations that you had. Because I think that the commitment of having it somewhere, having it on paper, having it on a voice note to yourself on your phone is really important. I think that, though, it's really allowing yourself enough time to brainstorm. And that is the thing that parents have a hard time with. But I think everyone has a hard time with it, because we always have a phone in our hand, or we can always have a phone in our hand. If we are uncomfortable, we can basically use it as a self-soothing mechanism. It is no different than a pacifier for a toddler. Okay. And so really, like, you know, as Brené Brown would say, braving the wilderness, really like going deep and recognizing there's something wrong. It's the first step. The second step is to then go in deeper into what's wrong, but also what's right. So the clarity journal starts out with a chapter on what's right in your life. And that's because a lot of times we'll throw the baby out with bathwater. If you focus too much on what's going wrong, you're going to forget that one of the things that's lovely about this job is that you get to spend a lot of time with your kids. Or one of the things that's lovely about this job is you have a boss that's not a micromanager, or one of the things that you love about your business is that it allows you to express creativity. Instead, you get in the weeds like, oh, I can't stand dealing with the finances of my business, or I'm not really great at social media, or whatever it is, that self-talk. And when you can balance both, especially if you're a business owner, then you can really like see what's going on in a more realistic light, and also see like what needs to change instead of feeling that blow up energy. Like, I think a lot of people, when they are feeling stuck, if they have stayed stuck too long, as soon as they start even getting a little bit of clarity, they just want to like let go of what they had done before and move on. And I know we've all known entrepreneurs like that who have, and I have been that entrepreneur before. Hello, my name is Becca. And because you've been so stuck, like that energy needs to go somewhere. And so you're starting to get clarity and you're like, oh, I'm going to like change everything. No, take a moment, really notice what's good. So that way you can go forth with real clarity, not just kind of frenetic energy.
That's great advice.
I think too, when you reference the athletes and that you say, read a prompt and go for a run. I love that idea of like the active learner, because I think our children are all active learners, and most of our children don't want to sit down and be like, oh, let me write on these feelings. But you could even use something like your journal to prompt children to talk with you. Like, hey, let's think about X, Y, and Z. And also what you had just said, let's talk about what's right. Like, how powerful is that to ask your children instead of saying, gosh, you seem down, what's wrong? And maybe they can't quite untangle those colorful feelings like you were referencing in that book, but they can tell you what's right. And so I think starting from a place of what's right is powerful for us as adults in relationships, and then also with our children and respect to our children and encouraging them to do the same. So I think that's a great reminder to me as we're talking to start with what's good.
Yeah. And I think you just simplified something, Becca, where we all make that mistake. And that's why we all laughed and raised our hand. But yeah, you get some clarity, like, oh my gosh, I got to demolish the whole thing and rebuild it. A lot of the times, that's an instant thing and it's noble. We're thinking it's, you know, this is, we're going for a huge solution. But what I've learned is once you start to get stuff out, like you said, take your time, get it out. If you really sit with it, you can see it's not necessarily a total rebuild. It's a course correction. Let me turn 5 degrees this way. Or let me add this back into the rhythms and schedule. I was doing that and I wasn't controlling that, but I've just left this one thing out. So I've learned that when you take the time to do this, and that's why I love the fact you're journaling on just clarity, you learn like, gosh, maybe it's not Mount Everest. Maybe it's just a 6-foot sand dune that I got to walk up, not Mount Everest. And I think that gives hope and comfort to people who are feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, and I think that kind of brought up a point in my head. I feel like sometimes when we talk about especially life purpose, that we almost go back to the 1950s. In the 1950s, we had one job for our entire lives. And yeah, you'd get promotions, but you'd be at the same company. You'd be doing the same basic thing or managing people that were doing. And for some reason, when we talk about life purpose, we bring ourselves back to the 1950s. And we're like, okay, what am I going to be doing for the next 25 years until I retire, or 35 years? And that is unknowable. There is no way from any book, if you were, unless you're like in your early 60s, that you are going to be able to take the book and be like, I'm going to know what my entire path is for the next 20, 30, 40 years, because it's always shifting. We are on this life path, and this life path is beautiful, and we can really embrace the idea of life path instead of like this endpoint purpose. Then it gives us a lot of courage to make those course corrections and to recognize those course corrections are inevitable, because it stops being a challenge. Like, whatever you're going to decide today, in 3 years, 2-3 years, it's going to be easy and boring. Like, you're going to need a new challenge. No one is listening to this podcast because they want to stay static in their life for the next 20 years. And so there are people, we all know people like that. None of them are listening to this podcast. And so
they wouldn't be doing that.
And so we're really like figuring out what this next jump point is. Like, think of it more like those stones across a creek. and you're making these little course corrections. And that's great because it's keeping you along the path. And I think what we do is like when we stay in one place too long, we get frustrated, bored. That's where what I was talking about at the beginning comes in, where we start snapping at people. And really what needs to happen is we just need to like build up a little bit more momentum to see it as it's happening. Okay, now I've done this. This challenge has been great. Or this challenge doesn't really work for me. It's like maybe you had decided you were going to do TikTok and evidently you're not really great at video. That's fine. You just do a course correction instead of beating yourself up. And I think that that is a big thing in parenting too. It's like teaching our kids, if they need to make a change, that they don't have to do it via beating themselves up. I think so much in school, the only thing that we teach kids a lot of times in school is to beat themselves up if they're doing badly. Like how many times as a child, unless you had really fantastic parents, did you like come home with a report card like, oh, you got an A in math. That's great. But you really need to work on writing. Well, but how? We don't teach the kids the how of that often, unless they're really failing. Then we'll get them a tutor. But we probably guilted them a lot before. Yeah. I mean, hopefully we personally didn't, but as children, we saw it happen. And yeah. I think that it really does teach kids that like the only thing in their toolbox is to power through. And as adults, then we take that. And the only thing in our toolbox really is to power through. That's what we kind of go to the quickest. But using up willpower really does actually burn through a lot of cognitive energy. It's so much better to come from a place of strength and a place of recognizing that I need to change. But you know what? I'm going to have people that help me, or I'm going to hire a coach, or these three friends really know their stuff. I'm going to ask them. Now, I do caution people. When you are using other people, it is really important to have more than one other person you are using. Because if you use only one person, then sometimes you will end up coming up with things that aren't authentic to you, because when you have like three people, four people that are really helping you, then you can take what they say and blend it into your own vision. But when you have like one person who's really good at this, I use that in air quotes for people who aren't seeing, then you might just end up feeling like you should do it. And I get that a lot too, where like someone will come to me, like, I don't know what to do. And what ends up really coming through oftentimes is they have a should do, something that everyone thinks they should do. And then they have the thing they want to do. And they barely talk about that because they aren't getting the social affirmation that they want.
Yeah. And that's super important for us and for our children. Like you said, that buffet style or mastermind style versus maybe taking on someone else's imprint that wasn't authentically yours. Of course, yeah. And then you referencing powering through, if you exchange that word power through with suffer, I'm thinking, wow, we tell our children, suck it up, buttercup, or power through this, or, oh, just get to the other side. And really, as you were talking, I'm like, oh, we're saying suffer, go ahead and suffer. We're good. Go ahead and suffer through it. And we don't
bug me about it.
Yeah. So really we don't want suffering for us or for them. So really that concept of powering through is, none of us should have to power through.
No. I could go on forever, but before I ask our finale question of every episode, I did want to find out, where can people learn more about the Clarity Journal, about your work? Where can they contact you?
So the Clarity Journal is easy to find on Amazon. And then you can find me at BeccaRibbing.com. That's B-E-C-C-A Ribbing, R-I-B-B-I-N-G.com.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure if you've seen some of our episodes before, we started to ask a question to try to raise some new awareness and ideas, something that we've used on ourselves. And we all know the question, hey, I want to ask, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? And that's great. But we started to ask at the beginning of the pandemic, because we needed some older, wiser, more sage advice, what would my 75-year-old self tell me now? What would be the advice they'd give me, to the others around me, my family? So we're asking, you know, a much older, wiser, still energetic Becca of 75. What do you think 75-year-old Becca's advice would be?
Happiness is the only thing that matters.
Oh, that's very good. Mm-hmm. Clean, straightforward, and without hesitation. I love that. Happiness is the only thing that matters. I love it. Well, Becca, it's been an honor and a pleasure. I love what you're doing. I agree with you that this is one of the most important ingredients in actual fulfillment and success on the personal and professional side. Without clarity, you're not having much fuel in the tank. So we do appreciate it. We look forward to having you on again, hopefully.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much, Becca.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.